My name is Laurens Jacht, and welcome to Cybersecurity Talks, the interview podcast for cybersecurity professionals and for those who aspire to become one. Join us on our journey and learn about the latest trends, real-life war stories, and everything you need to know about this fascinating industry. I'm very happy and excited to announce today's guest, Faysha Bernard. Faysha is one of the owners of iSecurity. iSecurity started only 3 years ago and already secured an investment round of 17 million euros. Faysha is the chief hacker at iSecurity and is rapidly scaling his team of hackers, consultants, and incident responders. After finalizing a bachelor and master degree in artificial intelligence, Faysha started working at the Dutch General Intelligence and Security Service. First as a data scientist, but later he became a cybersecurity specialist. He grew the ranks, and in 2020, just before joining iSecurity, he was a team lead cybersecurity at the Dutch General Intelligence and Security Services. And then the adventure started with iSecurity. Welcome to the show, Faysha.
Thank you, Laurens.
Very pleased to have you on the show. I'm very curious to hear more about the ongoing success of iSecurity, but I'm also excited to learn more about your career and how you entered the field. And what I noticed that with many of our guests, you did a bachelor and master in artificial intelligence. Back then, I think there was a very new study. What made you decide to go for it?
Yeah, you know, when you're young, sometimes really stupid ideas come to mind. And that's, I think, why I started my first studies in astrophysics, because I really liked looking at the stars when I was young. Okay. And I thought astrophysics was this romantic idea of getting to know more about extraterrestrial life, knowing about how all these constellations work and how star systems work. But then in reality, you're just doing math all day. So I quit astrophysics after the first year, and then I was actually just browsing like what kind of studies are there, and I was especially looking for something that was a mix of the different fields I liked. And I was getting a bit into psychology back then, and then I found out that at the University of Utrecht there was this bachelor called Cognitive Artificial Intelligence, which was a take on artificial intelligence, but from a viewpoint of the psychology department and the philosophy department. So it was actually a bit the other way around, not doing computer science and learning about algorithms, AI algorithms, but it was more like learning about the human mind and cognition and trying to model that.
Yeah.
It was really intriguing to me. So I had a lot of fun doing my bachelor's there. But then after 3 years, I realized there's no way I could get a job with this. So I switched to the University of Amsterdam to do a more hardcore master forensic intelligence, it was called. It was a collaboration between the Dutch NIV, the Forensic Institute of the Netherlands, and the UvA. It was the application of artificial intelligence in the forensic work field. It was a really interesting master. I also did a internship at the Dutch Forensic Institute. But then I saw a very interesting vacancy at the Dutch General Intelligence and Security Service, where they were looking for a data scientist. This job description really fit what I was looking for. So I applied and I got hired.
Yeah, that's really cool. I want to jump into it more. But I'm curious if you stand now with a girl underneath the stars. There's always one guy that can tell a bit more about stars than the other. You're still that guy, I assume, right?
Yeah, I still know a bit about constellations. So I'll always point out how all the stars are called. And yeah, I'm that geek still. Yeah.
Smooth. Very good. Okay, so after the master, you joined the intelligence services?
Yes.
What was that process? Because I assume it's a very lengthy process where you also have like a lot of background screenings.
Yeah, there were black vans in front of my door and people in suits with black sunglasses pointing guns at me. No, it's just a regular job interview. You're a government employee, so it's kind of boring actually to do the interview.
Okay, it's not as exciting.
It's not as exciting. No.
Okay. No, but cool. And you start as a data scientist.
Yes. So when I started there, I realized that it didn't trigger my interests that much. And the team was a bit old. Everybody was above 50. There was not much technical knowledge in the team. I couldn't really grow. I started there and I learned some things, but there was no growth opportunity. But internally, I got to meet some really cool cybersecurity professionals. And that triggered actually an old interest of me, because I was already playing around on the internet when I was 10 years old. So I knew a bit about cybersecurity from hobbying around. I realized that, well, that intrigued me a lot more. So I actually switched careers only after a year and jumped into a more cybersecurity topic.
Okay. And was it already a big field back then? Because we were speaking a couple of years ago.
Yeah, now. This was 2011, I think. It was already growing, definitely. But it was, compared to how it's now, it was nothing.
How we build iSecurity.
But before we started the podcast, you already told me don't ask too many detailed questions about my time at the Dutch Intelligence Services.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna try to get something out of you. But you worked there for 10 years.
Yeah, I can tell you a bit about. I think that's the most interesting part. Like, how did I kind of tell you what I did there? But I can tell you a bit about how we thought of the idea of I, which I started after working there. And I already knew the other founders of I for a while, because they also worked at the Dutch Intelligence and Security Services. And together we worked sometimes on some projects where we helped companies that were hit by a cyber incident. And these were companies in the vital sector or part of the Dutch government who sometimes were hit by a cyber attack. And sometimes might have been hit by an advanced persistent threat where a state actor might have been on their network for a longer period and they didn't know.
Okay.
And these were organizations that they were on top of their game. They knew about cybersecurity. They had the right people to defend them. And still they were being hit. And then we realized after this happened a couple of times that after investigating the root cause and locating where the incident came from, we realized that it was often a supplier or an IT partner that was in the periphery of this organization that was hit first. And these were all small companies, small and medium enterprises. And they did not have the right people. They did not know anything about cybersecurity. They trusted their IT guy or their IT partner to keep them secure. And this was often an IT guy that had been working there for 20 years and doing IT and, well, also doing cybersecurity, because that was part of IT in their vision. And they actually had no clue how to defend them, but also no access to new technologies. They had no access to endpoint detection and response software, because the licenses start at 1,000 endpoints and they were companies of 20, 30 people. So there was actually no way they could, in good faith, defend themselves.
Yeah.
And that was when we realized we want to do something about that. We want to change that and make cybersecurity accessible for smaller organizations.
Yeah. So if I summarize it, it was not so much the big government institutions or the big critical companies that had the issue, but it was more the mid and the small size companies that were causing the problem.
Yes, definitely.
And you saw that from the intelligence services that something needed to change, but not with the big fish, but the smaller companies.
Yeah. Yeah. For the bigger organizations, there were already solutions that they could hire or they could deploy. They could engage. There were cybersecurity companies in the Netherlands back then. Some big ones, some really good ones. But they were all focusing on bigger enterprises.
So you saw the market gap there and yep. The need. But how do you go from having this idea with a couple colleagues to actually build a company out of it?
Well, that is quite a story. Do you have the time?
Yes.
So we realized that we needed to make a solution available for small and medium enterprises. But to do that, you have to make cybersecurity not only understandable, but also easy to deploy. These are the kind of companies where often nobody within the company is very skilled in IT. So it needs to be a low effort thing for them. But it also needs to be scalable, because you cannot bring a solution to 10 small enterprises and build an entire company on that. So it needs to be something that does not require a lot of effort. But on the other hand, we wanted to really make impact, because there were already some solutions that were on the market for small and medium enterprises. But we realized they really did not work at all. Like the small big black box, or the small black boxes that you buy and then put in your network, and then suddenly you're secure. Well, don't do that. It you're not secure.
Yeah.
So we really wanted to make impact with a solution, and so we sat down and we drew out the idea, and we realized that. While in the past, a solution based on network monitoring only would have been okay to protect a company from cyber threats. But already in the last 10 to 15 years, you saw the value of network monitoring going down, because everybody was implementing SSL, everybody was using cloud services. So in the end, you only saw encrypted connections to cloud services. And then attackers started using encrypted connections to cloud services, and you cannot distinguish between them, and well, you're not secured. So we realized we needed to deploy endpoint detection and response. So if we wanted to make impact, we really needed to be on the endpoints, at the places where the attacks happen, the places where it goes wrong. So we had a look at what was available in the market of EDR technology. And of course, we did not simply believe all the reviews and comparisons that were out there. We wanted to test them ourselves, because we wanted to be sure it was a good product. So we ended up with doing trials with the top 10 vendors and launching our own attacks in lab environments on endpoints protected by this software. So we took 300 pieces of recent ransomware and let them run rampant. And we also had a look at how well the software made us be able to investigate what was going on the endpoints. And also the speed that it allowed us to do our work. And combining all these factors, we ended up, I think, with a top 3 or 4 that were actually good enough for us.
Okay.
And we realized that by implementing this software as a service, we would be able to really make impact and protect smaller companies. So that's the core of what we do.
Yeah, I know the product and the service. It's really unique in the market, would say.
But then you have an idea.
Yeah, that's what was my question. Yeah. Was this fooling around and playing in the lab? That's very cool. But was this already when the company was started, or was this still before you actually went to the Chamber of Commerce?
No, we already went to the Chamber of Commerce. The company already has started, but we had no clients. So in the beginning, we thought, well, let's take 50% of our time and do consultancy to get cash flow. So we could get the company running for months, first year, without having any other clients. And the other 50% of our time, let's build this product.
Yeah.
So we were, in the beginning, we were everywhere doing, we can do anything, cybersecurity, and we'll help and do consultancy, and you want to buy our product? We know, I have no idea what the pricing is. And it was just
cowboys
entrepreneuring.
Yeah.
And then we landed a few consultancy contracts, because, well, we had a big network, our skills were really in demand everywhere. And so then we were doing consultancy half of the time and the other half of the time building the product. And then we realized that the product, well, the basic, the minimum viable product was quite easy to set up and implement. And well, there was actually some demand. So the first customers came quite quickly. What really helped in the beginning was actually a Corona hit. And I remember when I signed to be a full-time employee of AI Security, it was 1 week before everybody realized that Corona was going to be a really big thing and the first lockdowns hit. So my whole, my family, my friends, everybody said to me, oh no, you're not going to say goodbye to your stable and secure government job right now, right?
Yeah.
and going, doing some kind of business in an economy that's going down the drain. And well, and I got a bit scared. But then my girlfriend said to me, well, there's always 1,000 reasons not to do something. Now there's 1,001. So go for it.
Ah, that's very cool.
And I thought, well, if there's someone I sometimes need to listen to, it's her. So I went for it. And it actually helped us a lot because when targeting the mid-sized market and smaller enterprises in the past, it was really a market where you have to go to your clients, drink some coffee and explain what you were doing, build some trust. And then after 3 or 4 meetings in person, they would sign. But that was way too much investment for a revenue that, well, was a lot lower because it's a small company and you are making a product that's affordable. But now suddenly, because of Corona, even these small companies all had installed Microsoft Teams and Zoom and were getting used to doing digital meetings. And suddenly, well, we could just plan 3 meetings of half an hour behind the laptop with them. And they would also sign. So it really shortened our time that we needed to do sales in the beginning. So that helped a lot. And what also helped was that we took the initiative when Corona hit to help the hospitals back then. So we set up wehelphospitals.nl in Dutch and brought the security community together where all these different security companies in the Netherlands donated consultancy hours for the healthcare sector, which was in a big need back then. And this got quite some media attention and put us quickly on the radar of the community and well, in the country.
We make the difference.
So that was really an accelerator.
That was an accelerator, yes.
Yeah. And now, fast forward, it's 2.5 years after you made this brave decision.
Yep.
And now you recently secured an investment of 17 million euros.
Yes.
So I think during these last 2.5 years, there were probably way more accelerators because things have been going really well.
Yeah.
But what are some things that really make iSecurity so unique? Is it the people or is it the proposition or was it the timing?
It's a combination of all three, I think. So we had the right idea at the right time, but it's a gimmick, I think, if you say that. Every entrepreneur says that. I think we really have some really good people, and we already had a hunch that people make the difference, but we were really we were able to quantify that last year. Because we did a review of 2022 and had a look at how well were we able to protect our clients. And so we made an inventory of all the incidents we had and everything that happened that we were able to stop at our clients. And we realized that 1 in 5 of our clients would have had a serious cyber incident without our interference. And not only that, of these cyber incidents, only 20% was solved by the technology alone, and 80% needed manual interference by our cybersecurity specialists.
Okay, this is huge.
So people make the difference.
Yeah.
And you really need good people to make that difference. People who understand what's going on, who are curious about things they don't know, who dare to make mistakes. So,
but what I find so beautiful is that the founding fathers of the company and yourself included, most of you have a background with the intelligence and security services, but that usually are not the super entrepreneurial people. But then you come together and within 3 years, it's a company worth tens of millions of euros. So it's really a unique story.
Yeah, I think with the five of us, there were three official founders, and then Niels and I quickly joined right after. So we built the company with the five of us, so to say. I think we really have a very distinct skill set and really complement each other in that. So and we all have a very positive mindset, and it just clicked. We already worked together on several projects years before we started I. So when I heard about the idea, well, it was blind trust, and I jumped on the ship without thinking, so to say.
Yeah.
But somehow it works, and we did manage it without much experience building a startup or growing a scale up.
Yeah, and can you explain to our listeners very shortly, what is the product and also the combination with the insurance? Because that's kind of groundbreaking.
Yeah. So the product is a all-in-one cybersecurity solution where we do monitoring and detection on all endpoints and cloud environments that our customers have. And we also do incident response. And we combine that. So you can call it managed detection and response or extended detection and response. There are a lot of abbreviations that are about the same thing. What we say to our customers is, if anything happens, we'll see it and we'll act on it. So think of the simple case that a customer has a malware infection. Well, if the AV doesn't completely stop it, we'll make sure it's stopped, it's removed, and investigate if anything happened further, if there's still a threat left, make sure our client is safe. But the technology, the EDR technology, is also very good in detecting suspicious behavior. So think of the example where a system administrator logs in the middle of the night and starts running reconnaissance commands, like who am I, using commands to look up the ARP table or scanning for hosts that are around. Well, it's not normal behavior of a system administrator, but there's still no virus involved. There's no malware involved, but definitely something suspicious is going on. We get an alert that this happens, and our cybersecurity specialists immediately investigate 24/7 what's going on in the system. And if they are not sure that it is legitimate, we will contact our clients and discuss, is this limit legitimate? Do we need to do anything? If we're sure that it's malicious, we'll act on it. We can isolate an endpoint. We can block a process. We'll do anything to stop the threat immediately in its tracks.
Yeah.
And by combining the expertise of a security operations center analyst and incident responder in the same person, we're able to act really quickly. So an attacker can be on a system running the who am I command, and within a minute, his connection is terminated.
That's really cool to see. Yeah. And this sounds really promising. And I think you've proven the market that it actually works. You're able to prevent and otherwise detect. But then the insurance for me was something like, okay, but why would I need an insurance then? But can you explain on that?
I can definitely explain that. So no cybersecurity solution is 100% perfect. You can always put more money in your cybersecurity budget, and you'll never be able to completely 100% make sure that an attacker never comes in. So we see it more that you need to distribute your budget between different phases of an attack. The first phase, you might prevent a part of the attacks. And by putting a decent amount of your budget in preventive measures, you'll be able to stop 80% of attacks. And your next part of your budget, you should put in detection and response capabilities. That's what we offer. And then you can stop another 80% of all attacks. But there's always this new technique that attackers might use, or this newly developed malware that's not being detected anywhere, or a new phishing technique, or a new MFA bypass method. There's always something that will end up in doing some damage. And that's the part that you can ensure.
Okay, and so we covered the part, the artificial intelligence. How does that play a role? But I'm also curious your experience with the intelligence and security services, your experience, but also of your co-founders. That probably helps a lot in the day-to-day work, and also with getting your name across and maybe onboarding new clients, because it's really a SWAT team that enters the door. So you immediately feel, okay, these guys know what they're doing. How do you see that?
Well, on the one hand, it might have helped because we were already used to working together as a team and knew what everybody was capable of and how we would deal with a crisis situation. So these things really helped. On the other hand, nobody knew us because we were off the radar. We did not have a LinkedIn. We were not there. So in the community, there was suddenly this two principal cybersecurity specialists who nobody heard of.
They're ghosts.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. So it was actually hard to get your name out there.
It did help that there was some publicity in the beginning, and we really worked hard to get our name out there. So that there actually was this newspaper article about five people leaving the General Intelligence and Security Service, and everybody thought that we were the ones who initiated the article, but we were confronted with it as well. So we had no clue that it was going to be published, and suddenly it was out there on the page 2 of the Volkskrant.
Yeah, because for the intelligence service, it was also a big hit, probably, if you have five seniors leaving.
Yeah, on the one hand, you might think that, but it's a big community and it's a big organization, and there's a lot of expertise there. We were all at the end of our career, so to say. So it wasn't for none of us. It was a surprise that we were leaving.
Fun is our core value.
But now moving forward, what has changed? You look at the bank account, and then there's a huge chunk of money all of a sudden there. What are now the goals? Because the investors at some point want to see a return on investment. So you probably have some clear plans of what you want to achieve next.
Yeah, so it the investment did not suddenly came out of nowhere. So we already planned for a long time on this growth. So we were actually on track, and this investment came as a usual or as a logical consequence of what we were doing. So the goals did not suddenly change when we got the investment, but we did get the opportunity to realize this growth sooner than earlier, rather than later. So what is on track, what we are going to do in the next couple of months and years? So we recently opened an office in Belgium and in Germany, and we really want to expand there. And we're already secretly looking into what other countries in Europe to move into next. So that are our plans for the coming year.
Yeah, because it must be, if an investor is willing to make such a big investment, your goals must be very ambitious as well.
Yes.
And if you look at headcount, how big is the company now, and where do you see yourself then in 2 or 3 years?
I think right now we're about 80 strong, and it might double this year. So
yeah,
it's growing quickly.
It's growing quickly. And did the company culture change? Because you started with five people that knew each other very, very well.
That's a very good question. So when we started the company, we said to each other, this is going to be a tough ride. It's going to be long days. It's going to be hard. It's going to be difficult. We have to trust each other. But if we want to make it, if we want to be successful, there's one thing we really need to make sure, and that's that we're going to have a lot of fun doing this. So that became sort of a mantra, and it stuck. So we were having fun at the beginning when there were five of us, and then we grew to 20 people, and we said, well, we're still having a lot of fun. And yeah. We talked about our core values as a company, and fun is one of our four core values. So we have also a culture club. People from all around the organization who work together to keep the culture within the company alive, and to this specific I culture that we've nurtured and built, that was centered around being a startup when we were beginning, and then it was centered around being a scale up, but it kept being a very positive vibe and having fun together and being there for each other. And having this open environment where everybody felt safe, but also felt that they could make mistakes and they were allowed to be themselves. And that's really something that we value a lot and put a lot of effort in maintaining.
So it's really nice to hear how you protect the company culture. That fun is a crucial part of it. But what you guys do, and I think do very well, is also the serious part of the business and why you eventually all left the security intelligence services to actually do the real heavy lifting. Can you give some examples of success stories or that you felt really proud to help a company?
Yeah, I think one good example of having direct impact is when we were just started, we were called by this small transport company from the south of the Netherlands. And this entrepreneur, it was a family company. He built it up with his own hands for 20 years, and he now had 30 trucks and transporting goods around. And he was hit by ransomware, and suddenly all his IT was down. He called us on a Friday afternoon. And he said, well, there's a couple of trucks in front of my building, and more are coming in, and I have no idea what's inside them. I have no idea where they came from, and I definitely have no idea where they need to go. And if this is not resolved by Monday, I'm going to pay these criminals, otherwise I'm bankrupt. You're really one-on-one with the people feeling the impact of cyber incidents, and you can really make a difference in helping them. And we immediately started doing our investigation on what happened and how we could help. And we realized that these cyber criminals, they were a bit amateurish. And they did not use any known malware. They only used living of the land stuff. And so they uploaded a old piece of backup software. And with this backup software, the criminals made a backup that was password protected and then deleted all the normal data. So this was the ransomware attack.
Okay.
And we dug a little deeper and realized that this backup software stored an encrypted version of the password in the registry. And we were able to reverse engineer the decryption algorithm. It was on a Saturday night, and then on Sunday we were able to decrypt the data, and on Monday the trucks could get going again where they needed to go. So this was really one of those few times that you are able to decrypt a ransomware without paying.
Wow.
It doesn't happen a lot, but this was really a nice example of helping somebody and having direct impact.
Yeah, because that person probably thought maybe I'm going bankrupt or this is the end of my company. I need to pay them as soon as possible.
Yeah, especially in this segment of smaller companies, you are much closer to the people really feeling the impact, and therefore also much closer to making a difference.
Yeah, and from the the intelligence and security services, there you probably dealt also with more state actors and perhaps more sophisticated attacks. And now with smaller enterprises, you probably also see a lot of script kiddies and automated DDoS attacks.
Yeah, you should not underestimate, I think, the level of sophistication of ransomware threat actors nowadays. And these criminal groups are getting more and more organized and more sophisticated. And over 70% of all ransomware victims is in the SME segment. So the attacks themselves are maybe less sophisticated. The impact is and the way that they operate, it's that optimized and streamlined that they are definitely having a lot of victims and a lot of damage and a lot of impact with their attacks.
That's probably also why they keep pushing forward and more attacks are happening, because it pays out for them.
Yeah.
Do you have any advice for the SME companies besides onboarding your service? But what are some of the basic steps that they can take already to protect themselves?
There's always a couple of things that are very easy to implement and have a big effect. One of them is deploying multi-factor authentication on all your accounts everywhere. And the second one is patching all your hardened software as soon as a patch comes out, as soon as an update is available. And if you do those two, you'll reduce the risk by 80% already.
Yeah. Okay. That's huge. Yeah.
And then, the third thing is deploy our solution you'll be able to catch the other 20% that does come through.
Yeah. And if that doesn't work, there's always
and then there's the insurance.
No, but it makes perfect sense. Yeah. And I want to ask you, because you've had an amazing career, both for the Dutch government, you've probably seen so many cool things that sadly you cannot share. But now you started a startup that became a scale-up and that soon's going to be one of Europe's leading cybersecurity companies. What advice would you give the next generation of cybersecurity professionals? So the young listeners or people that feel like, hey, I want to start in this field as well?
It's a very good question. And what I always saw when, I've been on a lot of interviews, job interviews with prospect or with people wanting to get into the business. And you can have a very long CV with a lot of certifications. That does not tell me anything. But if somebody tells that he or she has been playing around at home with all these electronics and pulling things apart and being curious how things work and trying to break things, trying to get around stuff that it's used to do or supposed to do, that's a kind of curiosity that will get you very far in cybersecurity. Because the work field and the amount of knowledge that can be learned is that big that nobody knows even a substantial part of it. So everybody working in cybersecurity has, I think, 2 or 3% knowledge about what's there to know. So you'll always encounter situations that you have not seen before. Software, hardware, configurations. It's always an exception. It's always something else. And if you're able to very quickly acquire the skill of using this new piece of technology or understanding how something works from zero, from scratch, well, that is a very useful skill to have in cybersecurity. So the best professionals that I've seen, most of them did not have a formal background in cybersecurity. They were chemists or language specialists. And they all, because of their natural curiosity, quickly acquired the needed skill set of being a cybersecurity professional in the field. Another tip I want to give is that you might have already heard of the imposter syndrome, where within your area of expertise, you think that everybody else knows a lot more than you. And someday they are going to find out that you are an imposter and not know anything. Well, in cybersecurity, over 80% of everybody who works in cybersecurity has imposter syndrome. Well, and that is because there is so much to know, and most people only know a very small piece of the puzzle. So if you want to work in cybersecurity but think, I don't know enough, or everybody else knows more, well, you're not the only one. Everybody thinks that. And you cannot do it alone. You need a team. You need to work together. You need to combine your knowledge with the knowledge of other people working in the field, and together you can make a difference. So don't be afraid. Jump in and be curious.
Thank you for sharing. That's very motivating. Yeah, and we always finalize with the last question, and that's targeted to all the CISOs across the world. So if you can share one signal message to all of the CISOs across the world, what would you then state in that message?
Stop investing more money in preventive measures and start investing more money in detection and response.
Nice. That's also the vision of iSecurity.
Yeah. But it also holds for corporates. It also holds for enterprises. Everybody has already tried to build walls around their environment and dug trenches and then put more gates. And somehow the attack are still going to come in. But nobody has installed a good alarm system.
Nice. A perfect way to end. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Laurens. It was a pleasure being here.
Yeah, no, I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Cybersecurity Talks. If you've enjoyed this episode, don't forget to review and subscribe. For all further information on our live events and new podcast releases, go to csrecruitment.nl. Thank you and stay safe.